who had the, was it an honorable task of appointment of being the chairman of a task force called the Task Force on, the Governor's Task Force on Regulatory Reform. Here's, here we go now. They call the meeting of the Administrative Regulation Review Committee to order. Representative Bill Hudson and Representative Tom Bryce. We are expecting Senator Miller, I believe, to come along any time. The agenda this afternoon is to hear the report from Bonnie Williams, the chairman of the Governor's Task Force on Regulatory Reform. I don't believe any of us was aware that this task force had been formed until after the session had started. So as chairman, I was first approach some of the issues we were hoping to look at during the session and the interim. When we heard about this task force, we decided we heard that the report was due in mid-March, and we decided to wait for this completed report, which we now have, to make sure that we didn't duplicate and spend a lot of time and effort on some issues that may have already been broached and could save us a lot of time. So we're really glad to have you here this afternoon, Bonnie, and if you could go ahead and give us your report, and then we'll bombard you with some questions, I'm sure.
Well, thank you for allowing me to present this to you. I presented this report, the final report, to the governor Friday in Fairbanks while he was there, and got very positive reactions and responses from him from what he said at the time. Governor Hickel intends to appoint two, possibly three different people. So if there are things here that you would like, there should be someone, one or two or three people in the governor's administration to work with to go get them. I haven't heard who he has appointed yet, if anyone. But he said he needed at least an attorney and someone on his staff, or possibly the lieutenant governor. I would point out, Senator Lincoln pointed this out to me, I'd like to emphasize what our charge was. It was not all regulations. It was to review state regulations that inhibit economic opportunity and productivity, and to propose changes to those regulations. So we were looking at private enterprise affected or impacted regulations. Now, some of those also impact non-private enterprise areas, but our focus was in the private enterprise area. One of the recommendations, verbal recommendations, that I gave to Governor Hickel on Friday was that he should have a couple more task forces. I think one of the areas that we did not look at all, because it's too complicated and technical for the period of time that we had, is unemployment, workers' compensation. I think probably each one of those by themselves, a task force could focus on those and spend some months and effort and come up with good recommendations. Outside of the private enterprise area, I think that a task force possibly exclusively on health care, another one on education. And if you have reviewed the Alaska 2000 recommendations, one of the recommendations there on education was to review regulations that impact education. And in fact, if you wanted to help out school districts on their costs, you're not able to give them the money, the funding, because the state budget is declining. My God, there's a lot of regulations you could take off their backs that would really reduce their costs. And it wouldn't do anything to hurt education. In fact, it would help education. But you need somebody to go and look at that. Now, what we did, what you find in this report, is you find some general principles. We have six recommendations on changes to the Administrative Procedures Act itself. We believe that these changes should be in statute, not a governor's executive order, because that changes with governors, but something that's actually in the law. We believe that if these six general principal things in the Administrative Procedures Act were to be enacted, that regulations would become better. They would be better servants than they are currently. We would stop choking business as much as is currently happening. One of the really bad ones is when the federal government imposes something on the state in the area of clean air or clean water, for example. Municipalities, school districts, nonprofits, and private enterprise are all stuck with these things. The state is required to enact legislation to go that says the same thing, and you do. And then the state enacts regulations, and the regulations exceed what the state requires, what the feds require. So instead of it costing $100 million, it costs $200 million. Or it prohibits activity entirely. We are killing ourselves with this kind of stuff.
Excuse me, Bonnie.
Yes, sir.
Are these four, so are they pretty much prioritized by the...
No,
by
they're,
the,
not,
oh, okay.
They're not prioritized.
Okay.
The first five are kind of general idea things. The sixth one is a process. But we think it should be in code. Because if it's just a governor's order, it changes with governors, and you lose the process itself. We did a lot of research and reading and so forth in regulatory reform. It's a national institute that has developed a formula that says if you impose this many dollars of regulatory compliance on an industry, and it's a spread of $1.8 million to $7.5 million. That's the high end. If you impose that, you cost one life. Somebody loses their life because you have put those regulations out there. So there's a, you can do a cost-benefit analysis. You're going to pass this statute, you're going to impose these regulations, and you're trying to save lives. Okay, here's the cost in dollars. We're going to save two lives, $400,000, whatever. And the compliance cost is going to cost six lives. What you just did didn't make any sense. Go back to the drawing board. Start over. Now, if you can save six lives and only cost two by the compliance cost, you're making sense. We think that that cost-benefit analysis should be in statute, it should be required, and you ought to make the decisions. You, the administration, should make the decisions on what methodology is used in the regulation on the basis of real costs, not just dollars, but lives, jobs, effort.
Let's, excuse me, Bonnie, let's go ahead and feel free to break in with questions as,
Bonnie,
as we go along.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bonnie, would you explain a little bit further what you mean? You take a cost six lives, you mean six jobs?
No. People are dead. Lives. Someone died.
Explain. I guess I missed that. How does that work?
Okay. On the national basis, they require... I don't know, some OSHA regulation comes along, and it's going to cost $7,500,000 nationwide for everybody to comply. The compliance itself imposed on industry results in industry eliminating some jobs. Because the jobs are eliminated, people are out of work. Because they're out of work, their nutrition, et cetera, goes to pot. Maybe they have a little bit of lack of hope and they have some despair. They go into a little spousal abuse or drug abuse or whatever else. And ultimately,
a connective.
There's a connective for the compliance cost. They connected the $7,500,000 to one life. That someone loses their life because you did this. And at the low end, it was $1.8 million. And that's a pretty broad range. But there is some kind of a range out there like that.
And measurement standards.
So yeah.
Just compare.
Impose some regulatory thing on, let's say, on the tobacco industry, and what we're going to do is we're going to save three lives nationwide, but it's going to cost $5 billion. It's going to take a whole lot of people's lives to no real purpose. analysis is built into that sixth one, that process. We think it would be good in that process also if the industry that's going to be regulated, if they have an opportunity to come up with an alternative regulation, and that one happens to cost less, that's the one you ought to go with. That's the one the administration ought to take. If it comes out better in a cost-benefit analysis. Our general principle number 7 and 8 deal with agriculture. We had a lot of testimony on agriculture. And people did what we asked. They talked about specific regulations that were giving them heartburn, that were causing them to go bankrupt, frankly. Or a little bit crazy in some instances. And in fact, we looked at the regulations, and what the regulations have done is try to follow the statute. The problem is not with the regulations, the problem is with the statutes. If we, the state of Alaska, wishes to have an agriculture, a business at all in this state that makes economic sense, you have to go back and change the statute. You have to put it on equal footing with the rest of private enterprise in this state and in this country. You have to make it free enterprise capitalism and not central planning kind of mixed with medieval farming, I don't know. What we have right now are serf farmers, and they resent it and then they go bankrupt, and then we get a new group in, they resent it and they go bankrupt. Now, if you don't want an agribusiness in the state, fine, and keep what you've got. We have a few administrative changes that the governor could impose. And this first one, at number 9, I'd point out, has been brought forth by earlier task forces of other governors, and it really is needed. I know it costs money, and I'm a real conservative Republican. I hate to spend money, but I think it's really important to me. We found a real problem in the testimony. I think it needs to be addressed in the fact that the people that write the regulations and enforce the regulations and do the research that lead to the regulations and are the appeals officers can all be the same person. And if you transpose that into the criminal system, you throw that out in a minute. Well, we need to throw it out in a minute on the regulatory side. It shouldn't be possible to both write it and enforce it and be the appeals officer, or to have done the research and then write it and so forth. And the only way that I can see that you can separate that, well, I guess you could do it statutorily too, you need to have separate career ladders of some kind. You're going to be on the writing side of things, well, you can't be on the enforcement side of something. We found part of what brought this out is that people who came to give us testimony were reluctant to speak because those people they enforce and or write them might object to what they said and would retaliate. They would come out to their place of business and shut them down or make life miserable for them. So they didn't want to testify. This is supposed to be a democracy of free people. If we have people who are afraid to testify, we don't have a democracy. We have a problem. Somehow we need to fix that up.
Yes, Senator Lincoln.
Connie, on that note, and I think that's a fair statement, the retaliation and fear to testify. How did you deal with that so that you would hear those people who were reluctant or that didn't want to identify themselves?
Anybody that testified had to identify themselves. Some people that didn't testify. Other people mentioned people that were afraid to come forward, and they were not there.
And gave examples of the situation.
Yeah.
How about letters? Did you get any letters?
We got quite a bit of written stuff.
But they all identified themselves?
Yes. They all identified themselves. They didn't all make sense, but they were familiar with that.
We don't either.
I reviewed some of those and got some of the documents, and I'll share them with you.
Yeah, if they wanted serious consideration, they had to give us their name and address, and then it had to be a public record, public process.
How did you advertise to get input on?
Well, we did a couple of different things. We ran ads in the papers in the state, and I wasn't very happy with those. I thought they were too small and unnoticeable. We did a little bit of media work. We went around to some different groups and spoke to them. I had the governor's office in Fairbanks. That was the support staff for the task force. I had them send a letter that I wrote to all of the different trade associations that we could get addresses for, telling them about the task force and its purpose and the dates that they could testify if they had problems.
I remember seeing some of those ads.
Senator Lincoln?
Actually, I was going to wait for that question to the end, but since Representative Hudson brought it up, what kind of testimony did you get from the rural and bush area of Alaska? What advertising did you do out there in rural and bush Alaska? Was there teleconferencing that was done to the sites that were not LIOs?
That were not LIOs?
Yes.
We had a couple of remote sites that called in and asked to be connected, and they were. We had one meeting where, and it proved to be not really useful, where every LIO was open for the whole meeting, and it cost us a lot of money, but nobody came in a lot of the smaller areas. I don't think that we really did any advertising that got to smaller, bush or rural areas. Unless they get the Alaska Administrative Journal out of the Lieutenant Governor's office. I don't know how many people get that for you. There was something on TV in Anchorage that may have been on a channel that was RatNet, so it may have once flipped out there on RatNet.
But you don't know if it was.
I don't think.
Do you feel that?
And then, of course, I don't know what the addresses were for all those trade association things. And those guys, some of those guys turned around and sent bulletins, letters, newsletters, or alerts to all their members. And I don't know where those members are. So there may have been some bounce out to Bush News.
If I might, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
I don't mean to be putting you on the spot, but this is just something that is very. That's my question is that do you feel that you did get a fair representation across Alaska for any testimony or input?
No, I think we got an incomplete set of testimony. I think we got fairly complete good testimony in a couple of areas. You'll find the specific recommendations are by kind of industry or application.
More urban areas?
No, agriculture and mining. I think we did real well on. I think we did pretty well on underground storage tanks. After that, it was all hit and miss. It was not very satisfactory. Public awareness of it. There was a real reluctance to put out the right kind of advertising order. And there was a lot of reluctance on the part of the media to give it much coverage. They wanted to see what we were going to recommend before they would give coverage. Well, the recommendations were going to come out of the kind of information that we received, so that was self-defeating. In the specific industries, despite the fact that we recommend a change statutorily to the Agricultural Lands Act thing, there are a lot of other specific ones that aren't related to the land. They're just other problems for agriculture. Some of them are were a little nitpicky. Like the first one is this $50 fee to put your beehive on state lands. Well, beehive people might, in a good year, make $50 on a hive. If you make them pay a $50 fee, why are they putting it there? They're not going to. Or they're going to sneak it on state land or whatever. A lot of the things that you find under mining, you'll find replicated to some extent in the Alaska Mineral Commission's report.
Yeah.
We did not take them from the minerals report. We came to those same conclusions independently. We came to a conclusion that is not incorporated in here because we think we have addressed it in another way. Alaska shot itself in the foot on water back in 1972, and that's what's been killing the mining industry. But the proposed regulatory changes that DEC has before it, if they enact those, it will address a lot of the problems. And so we don't recommend what they really ought to do. What you really ought to do is go back and reclassify all the streams. But all the streams are at the moment classified as drinking water, the highest standard. And you know very well, you can go in your district and find a stream that nobody would dream of drinking. And there's no way technically that you could clean it up so that people would think about drinking it. It's just not drinking water.
Representative Price, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I thought it was real interesting, not with specific recommendations. We have a couple of bills on the House side that we've introduced. As a matter of fact, on number 13, I introduced that bill in early February.
Right. Right. I got copies of your bills, 132 and 213.
I'm talking about 132. I did co-sponsor 213. I got beat to the punch on that one. And I thought that was very interesting that does currently exist, and that I wonder if you might be available, or whether this task force is amenable to writing letters of support for that type of legislation.
We've made the recommendation already
yeah.
in the report. I'm sure that there are members that would be happy to. Probably the member on the task force who would be most suited for you for
Charlie Bodie.
Okay. Superb.
I'm sorry, it was about 2:05 when Senator Lehman arrived.
We had a lot of different kinds of businesses talk to us about the underground storage tanks from all different kinds of angles. And we really couldn't address everything that they wanted. In the additional remarks in the back of the report, we added things that we did not make recommendations on, but that a number of different people gave testimony on. There's a problem with all the people that have underground storage tanks and the established state fund. The state fund has some rules, and they're very sensible rules. They take the money in the fund and they address life safety, the biggest life safety first. And it so happens that big tank owner holders, whatever, are the ones threatening more life. So they're eating up the money. The little tank owners think that they wanted a separate fund. That's what they came and told us. And what they really need is some communication. I don't know if they need it from the legislature, from the administration. They need someone to explain to them what the standards are for giving out that money and why it's that way. And it makes a lot of sense to me why it's that way. They need to be we have another problem in underground storage tanks, and that is that there's this whole regulatory procedure for getting final closure, but the agency will not grant it. they put you in inactive. They make you go through all these hoops. It costs a lot of money. It's drained you. You finally seal up the whole thing, but you don't get closure. You just get this little cloud on the marketability of your property.
Why is that, Bonnie?
We don't know. We didn't get anybody from agencies coming in defense of their regulations, so we don't know.
And there's no process in which they can get off the inactive?
Right.
Nothing.
Right. They're just going to sit there forever unless somehow government can give them a sense of fairness. Why go through all this expense? You may as well just not fix the problem.
I think that comment needs a big asterisk here, and I think we'll jump on that one. Senator Lincoln?
Did agencies testify, though? Did you ask them to testify?
No.
So by choice, you did not want to hear from the agencies?
No, that's not true. The governor gave us the charge in mid-October, whatever, and November and December are bad months for this. He wanted us to give a final report by the middle of March. I don't know if you've ever looked at the shelves that contain all of the regulations that could impact business. The only way that we could approach the problem was to reverse it and ask businesses to come to us and tell us what bothered them. So we did. And we set the process up so that they would tell us, we would think about all those things and do some research on them, and then we would make a set of draft recommendations, and everybody could come and comment on the draft recommendations, including agencies. Well, they didn't. They had an opportunity. They didn't have a specific invitation, but they did have an opportunity. We have some recommendations in here that ought to at least raise the eyebrows of what you would call environmental groups. And I know that they went and got copies of the draft and looked at them. And they came to listen, but they didn't testify.
But the agencies
did
know that they could have testified on those draft regulations.
Are they barred by law?
Well, I don't know what process they used.
They were not specifically invited.
Nor specifically excluded.
Right.
Another question that I had was when you're talking about the underground storage tanks, did your group also consider the above ground storage tanks?
No. I'm not sure to what extent some of the regulations they were looking at also applied above ground.
Yeah, that's the difference, I think. The federal EPA LUST program, we apply underground storage tanks, and our LUST programs, particularly underground storage tanks, pretty much was put in place to comply with the federal EPA law so as not to begin to lose federal monies. I think that was, I remember that.
But when we're talking about the specific task of the group is for economic development and economic opportunity and productivity, that in talking about the underground, there needed to be also the discussion of the above ground, because 95%, I would guess, in rural Alaska is above ground storage tanks, and it has a dramatic effect upon it. As we just noted, the Coast Guard now coming down and saying that we're going to close everything down this year, and now there's a 1 year stay on that. So that's why I raised that. That probably would be equally as important.
I point out SIA. What the agency is doing at the moment is charging an annual fee. And for owners of large numbers of tanks, we're talking thousands of dollars a year in annual fees. This is a serious negative impact on business to 525. It's a hidden tax.
Where does that fee go? Just straight into regular?
The fee supposedly is for registering your tank. When you go through a rather extensive set of paperwork to register your tank, and it's an underground tank, why do you have to do it again the next year? If you dig it up, you got to go through this other process. Presumably, you didn't dig it up. It didn't move. It doesn't have legs. It didn't tunnel its way someplace else.
So a one-time fee was, yeah.
So why are you charging it again the following year? Well, the only answer is the agency wants to raise some revenue, and this is a way to raise revenue. All right, call it a tax. But it's a really unfair and unfortunate tax, because these underground tank things have already driven a whole lot of small businesses out of business in this state. Well, that's courtesy of the feds, but we don't have to make it worse on the state level.
Senator Lee, yes.
Bonnie, I was just going to comment on that, maybe provide a little bit of history, and I'm not going to provide it to defend the program or how it was funded, but maybe give you some names that you can use if you ever want to follow up. And I guess maybe we're going to follow up. I know who the players are. Janice Adair, who was now at DEC, used to be a Senator Binkley, was a big player in helping craft that original legislation. And the question was, how are we going to fund the program, and how are we going to provide a fund for underground storage tank owners to participate in, to use for fix-up? So it came down to be sort of, the solution came down to be a registration fee plus some other mechanism, and there was an argument over whether it would be a fuel tax, which was proposed at one time, and then it went to a general fund component, and there was a proposal. I don't remember if any of the years the money came out of the 470 fund.
Last year.
It did out of course.
Before it went into it, they took it out. Before they put it into the.
It was proposed last year, but never was.
No, they took money out of there before it ever went into the 470.
Yeah, well, and some want to use the 470 fund. And so it just came down to a fairness issue. Who should be paying that? Should it be the owners of the tanks, or should it be the general public? And people legitimately argued for every one of those proposals that were made. Anybody who uses fuel arguably should be taxed on it, or those who own the tanks, because they have the tanks and it's their enterprise, and so they should be paying. And that's a little bit of the history of it. It's not really an easy issue, you're right. The federal program helped. I don't know if it made the problem or it made us aware of the problem. I think it probably did contribute somewhat to the problem.
Excuse me. It's my intent to go to around 2:30, plus or minus.
Okay.
I have some flexibility there. Most of us have 3 o'clock meetings and haven't had a lot of opportunity to do some office things we need to do.
Can I point out just one on the top of page 14? This one was real interesting. The guy that brought it to our attention is the guy that has the potential for creating the work, creating the jobs. One of the products out of refineries is heavy bunker oil. And in 1970-72, a set of taxes on oil refinery products was established, and a tax was imposed on heavy bunker oil of $2.10, I guess, a barrel. Well, that priced Alaska's heavy bunker oil right out of the market. It's a low-grade oil. It doesn't create much of a price. So since then, the state has no heavy bunker oil has been sold in Alaska, so no tax has been collected. Now, Princess Tours, somebody like that, has broached the possibility of buying heavy bunker oil in Alaska from the Kenai refinery. But the only way that they can make a competitive price is if this tax gets changed. He asked that it be dropped, but what we're recommending is that it be looked at to see where it should be to be competitive. Right now, you're not collecting a dime because nothing is being sold. But maybe there is a 10-cent or a 15-cent or some kind of a tax where you're competitive. That company is buying their stuff in British Columbia at the moment. British Columbia is about to change their taxes, going up, of course. And so that's what you have to make it competitive with. But that one, he thinks he could make 8 to 10 jobs in the state, a whole new little industry. That'd be a nice little plus.
Representative Bryce?
Not specifically on this, or if you would like, I just had a general comment question. I don't know whether.
Okay. If I might finish on that, I think bunker oil is is a byproduct of, I think, the North Slope crude that Tesoro refines, and it's a residual. There's nothing they can do with it. And they're back hauling it to, or they're hauling it to someplace, so.
Right, where it actually finally is getting sold, but it's not getting sold in Alaska, so Alaska's not getting any benefit
Korea,
out of the tax.
Taiwan.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It's
number six.
Wow. Representative Bryce.
I was very pleased to see a lot of these recommendations on bonding, a lot of them that I had already, one that I'd introduced a bill on already, and a lot of other ones that sort of like made me scratch my head and go, maybe that did. One thing that was of concern to me, though, was there were no recommendations, and I don't know whether the committee addressed it or brought it up, but I was approached during the campaign quite often on issues relating to procurement regulations, that they're generally not very favorable to the small businessmen, that it's hard, if not impossible, to compete with some of the regulations that are currently on the books. Particularly with instance to the Department of Corrections, I guess, and some of those other folks. Was there any discussion with your folks about that?
Yeah, we had a couple of people come and testify on procurement, particularly as it relates to the graphic services at the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Graphic. I hadn't heard that.
And then we had comment, once that testimony was given, we had comment from other people who didn't have any particular expertise about the unfair competition for the Corrections Department of Corrections, prison industries.
Yeah.
But no specifics.
Okay.
And I was assigned the task, I'm trying to remember now, I was assigned the task of going away and finding out the truth about UAF. I went away and found out the truth about UAF. I came back to that last meeting and I told them the truth.
Well, that's too exciting.
Well, no, UAF's wrong.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. I can't remember. It's not in here, so we must not have made a recommendation on it. I'm trying to remember if I screwed up here. Part of the problem with UAF is the fact that they've already bought that equipment. You can't undo it. Once they've got the equipment, well, it's cheaper than building a house. But in fact, they have a policy issued by the guy in charge of the physical plant who's responsible for the print shop. That's in violation of the law. And he's got a funny interpretation of the law, and he's doing wrong. Somebody needs to jerk his chain. You know, a regulatory change won't do it. There's nothing wrong with the regulation.
That's wrong with how it's being carried out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering because there had been a lot of discussion, you know, that, the way that the bids are written, the way that the procurement officers and a lot of other state agencies write up the bid specs generally have a greater tendency to help bigger, larger, usually out-of-state-owned businesses. So,
I went to I made a presentation at the Alaska Manufacturers Association meeting. One of the individuals there was complaining about competition under procurement, claiming that they weren't getting any preference. And I've examined that, and that's not true. In fact, we're underwriting a lot of Alaskan businesses with our bidder preference. But if you want certain businesses to really develop, you have to do a certain amount of underwriting simply because of the volume and size.
Exactly.
Or you drive them out of business, which is what UAF Graphics might be doing.
Yeah.
Starting to drive them out of business.
Thank you.
I guess I didn't screw up. I guess we didn't recommend it.
Okay.
Any other questions? Representative Hudson.
Just a suggestion, Bonnie, because as Chairman of Labor and Commerce, we're looking at ways in which we can try to take some of the overt regulations off the back of business. And I think that it's our own fault, because we pass a law, and we've done volumes of them now, and then we hand them off to the governor, who in turn hands them off to some division, to a direct commissioner, who hands them off to a director, who hands them off to an administrative assistant, who in turn interprets that law. And then we never ask them for a copy of the regulations, or what the cost of it's going to be, or what the impact, or who it's going to impact. We don't follow up on a lot of our own decisions here. You know, government has to have some defined purpose when they create regulations or any kind of an imposition on a private citizen. What you're doing could be unhealthy for somebody else. You know, might impact their health, or might impact safety, or, you know, there has to be some public purpose. You want to protect, you know, the environment. You want to, you know, control speed. You want to do something. It has to be for some purpose. And I think that you know, what you've done is just kind of like open a little bit of the tent there to look into this whole thing. And I don't know, any suggestions from your experience on how we might get into the big picture? Because I think that there's an awful lot of regulations that were pertain to laws that were created way back when Moses was a boy, you know, and probably had good purpose. But, you know, technology's changed. Maybe that public purpose was really ill-defined in those days, and it's no longer the broad public view that that's really an unsafe measure or that's a risk we can't take. You know, Governor Lamb in Colorado put out a very wonderful paper that I saw. He's a visionary, that says that society is constantly confronted with affordable risks. You know, we take a risk when we walk across the street, we take a risk when we drive down the street, things of this nature. I think government's regulations believe that they're on the books and imposed upon its citizens because they can't afford the risks, and therefore these preclude the risks, or they force whoever's doing the work to go through all these tangled maze of regulations, and it ends up costing and costing and costing to the point where Alaskan farmers can't compete with Seattle farmers. And that's the reason we really import beef from Seattle in vast quantities, and potatoes, when we could really grow a lot of potatoes, you know. And I think that we need to do what you suggested here, and that is to begin to look at regulations and their impositions on the basis of what the cost-benefit is. And if the benefit is that you want to try to make certain that you know, that everybody's guaranteed never to get sick on your potatoes, what's the risk? Is it that you'll never grow a potato in the state of Alaska, you know?
Right. I know that this committee is sponsoring, I guess, a resolution to give the legislature authority to repeal regulations. We considered that. You don't find it in the report here because the task force would not support it, so I didn't put it in. Personally, I support it, but I thought it would be better for purposes of your resolution if we didn't make any comment at all on it. But you may never be able to get that past the voters, and so part of what you need, you may be able to get are changes to the Administrative Procedures Act. That's why we attacked there.
If I, Bonnie, I think what I'll have you do now is if you have I see on page 24 there's your task force status. If you have any, and the common everyday working person wasn't really affected, but now everybody's affected, so everybody's aware, and it's going to be quite a job. And I really commend the task force. I think this gives us a really good start. I didn't let Senator Lincoln's comment about the concern for the rural area go unnoticed. I think that's something, and I'm not downgrading the committee. It's like the agencies. They weren't excluded, but they weren't, people didn't go out of their way to include them either. But there are some specific concerns in the rural areas. Another thing I found out is the committee has a budget, and I don't. It's hard to understand right now what the use of that budget might be, other than maybe, well, if we get into one specific area, we might contract with, I don't know, a consultant to go out and search this out or whatever. Of course, we have staff that can do that. But I see what we did was supported a resolution drafted by a representative in the House, and I think there was a companion legislation in the Senate on the requesting that the legislature have oversight and regulations, ability to repeal regulations. And so this committee offered support of that. It's passed the House. I'm not sure how it's doing in the Senate. Of course, this will be the fourth time that that question has been on the ballot. It's been turned down three previous times. So this will be the fourth attempt. People that are involved in it feel that the wording on the ballot swayed things. There was pro and con and on things. So there are things we can do, and we'll be discussing them, I'm sure. And I'm not sure, as usual, at the end of these, I will hopefully give the committee members time to digest this and check with departments about validity of some of these questions and maybe answer some of the concerns and how some of these concerns may be better addressed or worked on. So it would be a couple weeks before I'll schedule another one. Senator Lincoln?
I was just thinking that since this, the way I read it was the Governor's Task Force on Regulatory Reform. And so I was thinking that this was just a real broad brush of regulatory reform throughout Alaska. And since this was a very narrow look at economic opportunity and productivity and nothing else, I wonder, is there other regulatory committees that were formed by the governor or previous governors that addressed?
I tell you, Hickel did not appoint any other regulatory reform.
Did any previous, and I don't mean like 10 years ago, but prior to Hickel, was there any kind of a regulatory? Because I think this is most helpful, and I'd like for us maybe to look at a committee or a task force that would look at a broad brush rather than, you know, a narrow focus. And maybe Bonnie might have some ideas since you've gone through this process. Is that possible to have a broad brush on regulatory reform for the state of Alaska and not? And what kind of time frame would you think would be allotted for that?
Oh, I'd give them at least a year, and I'd give them a lot more money than I gave this one.
For
we had
travel,
$25,000, and it covers the cost of the teleconferences and the travel trips. A few face-to-face and the rest by teleconference, a little bit of advertising.
Mr. Chairman, I would like at some point for us to...
And we're cheap. We're conservative.
Yes. Cheap. I like cheap. I would like for this committee to consider at some point maybe recommending to the governor that a regulatory reform task force be formed and give it a year.
And I would hope that this committee would give the spell out the task or recommendations of what we would want to see, hopefully in real brief explanation, so that the governor himself and his assignments then would know exactly what we're looking for. Very good. Bonnie.
Representative Davis, I'd like to point out one last thing. In the appendix, we reference a number of different things, and we include some of the articles that were brief, but one that we only referenced is paying for federal environmental mandates, a looming crisis for cities and counties, September 1992 by the municipality of Anchorage at the request of Mayor Tom Fink. And under costs on page 23, you can see what they calculated the cost of the federal environmental regulations are going to be. $429 million over the next 8 years.
I remember that when that came out in the paper, it didn't escape me.
I think it's just clean air and clean water. Well, the municipality of Anchorage is subject to that, and so is the Bush Village of Rampart. And if it costs that much for Anchorage, how much does it cost for Rampart? I'll bet you Rampart can't afford to pay for it either. We're drowning in this stuff.
Okay, I'd like to close. I know this could go on forever, and it's something that I've been dealing with for a long time, and I appreciate everybody's attendance and concern, and Bonnie, thank you, and the task force, all your people. Might adjourn 2:45.
What you sent here, this was...